Okay, so forget what you usually imagine about those hidden, maybe chaotic, Michelin-starred kitchens. At Crown Chai in New York City, Chef Jamal James Kent's kitchen, it's super open. It's practically in the dining room. Today, we're doing a deep dive into exactly how this, you know, really transparent, high-stakes place manages service for up to 300 guests. They're pushing out something like 1,000 dishes in just 6 hours. And the standard is, well, incredibly high.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And our insights for this this look inside, they come from a really fascinating source. The Bon Appetit YouTube video, we put 19 cameras in a Michelin-starred restaurant. Gives you a real fly-on-the-wall perspective.
Right. So our mission today is basically to pull out the key bits of wisdom, the insights into how this kitchen operates.
Yeah.
Chef Kent calls it a Swiss timepiece. We want to give you a kind of shortcut to understanding the controlled chaos, I guess, and the intense detail needed to give people the best possible dining experience. So yeah, let's unpack it.
Okay, so first off, setting the stage. Crown Chai is pretty unique. It's an NYC chef, Jamal James Kent, is running the show. And just picture this. Serving up to 300 people in a six-hour dinner rush, the goal is pushing out around 1,000 dishes. That volume is, well, it's staggering.
1,000 dishes. That's almost hard to wrap your head around. Especially, like you said, with the kitchen being so open, basically in the same room, mm-hmm. How does that actually affect the vibe and how they work?
Well, Chef Kent points out that this setup lets the kitchen's energy kind of bleed right into the dining room, and apparently guests love it. You could be sitting at table 51, which is this big table, like right in front of the kitchen, and you feel that energy. But yeah, it also means there's absolutely nowhere to hide. The first impression you get, it's high energy, it's intense, it's a demanding place where, as Chef Kent says, people don't mess around. You really feel the focus.
Okay, so in that kind of intense, totally visible environment, how do they even organize this huge team? There are dozens of people, right? How do they handle that pace and volume?
It's all about structure. The kitchen's broken down into main sections, very meticulously organized. Each one's run by a sous chef, and they've got their own cluster of line cooks. You've got pastry, obviously handling all the breads, the desserts. Then there's the guard manger. That's your cold station. It's this huge work surface where all the cold appetizers start. But interestingly, some ingredients for hot dishes also start their journey there.
Right. And for everything hot, the real engine has got to be the hotline.
Yeah.
You described it as the center suite.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's packed.
Oh, it is. Absolutely packed. That's where you find the grill, multiple ovens, this thing called a plancha, deep fryer, pasta stations, salamanders, these super hot broilers. And all these prepped ingredients, these partially cooked bits, they all eventually converge at one critical point. The pass.
Okay, so what happens there? And who's conducting that whole final stage?
The pass is like the nerve center, yeah. It's the final stage where every single dish comes together. Plating, building salads, adding sauces, putting on garnishes. It's described in the video as a mad rush to the pass. And the person orchestrating all of this, that's the expediter. At Crown Chai, it's Simran Singh. They call him the colony director. He tracks every single order coming in, every plate going out. He sounds intense, but also fun to work with, apparently. He's been with Chef Kent for 8 years, so they have history.
That's fascinating. So with all that pressure, that volume, mm-hmm. How do they keep communication so tight? Especially with everyone watching at that open kitchen. Accountability must be huge.
They have this really cool system. It's called the we or yes mm-hmm. system. So an order comes in, the ticket prints, the expo Simran calls out the order, and every single person in the kitchen has to respond out loud, we or yes.
Every single person. Wow.
Every single person. It's not just, you know, saying you heard it. It's a real-time accountability check, a closed-loop system. It makes sure everyone is awake, everyone's paying attention, and it keeps that energy flowing. It shows how in these high-stakes places, you need that clear, multi-party confirmation. Avoids mistakes, keeps everyone in sync. Chef Kent even shared the story about their very first service. The new staff were just genuinely shocked by it. They'd never experienced that kind of collective verbal buy-in before.
It's that kind of absolute clarity, that forced accountability through systems like the we that must underpin the speed and precision we're talking about. Okay, so let's get into some specific dishes. How does this communication translate into, say, a simple order? Like those Gruyere fritters. I hear they're super popular.
Oh, yeah. They're one of the biggest hits. And the backstory's fun, too. Chef Kent said the inspiration was kind of a playful take on, like, spicy, cheesy Doritos. Apparently, he actually used crushed Doritos when he was first developing the flavor profile.
No way. Doritos. Yeah. That's amazing.
Right. So the process itself is incredibly streamlined. There's a cook named Tamu who fries them fresh for every order. Then she pipes them with this cheesy Gruyere Mornay filling. She counts out exactly 7 fritters per order, then boom, runs them straight to the pass for finishing.
And the finishing touch is that Dorito-inspired powder.
Exactly. At the pass, they get dusted with their own house-made chili cheese powder. It's got that cheesy, chili, citrusy, spicy thing going on. And the speed. From the order ticket printing to the dish walking out to the dining room, it can be as fast as 3 or 4 minutes.
3 to 4 minutes. That's just, that's incredible speed for a Michelin-starred place.
It really is. And it just shows how dialed in that Garde Manger station is. Other things like salads or maybe a hamachi crudo, they can be fully assembled right there at the pass. It's all prepped ingredients, careful plating, just assembly at that point.
Okay, so that's the simple. Now let's shift gears to something more elaborate, like the chicken entree. Hot dishes, they always feel like they take longer, involve more steps.
Mm-hmm.
How do they coordinate those?
Yeah, hotline dishes definitely take longer. They tend to come out in waves, as they call it. The expediter, Simran, uses this thing called a pick system. Think of it like a spreadsheet, basically. It lists all the dishes for maybe 7 or 8 different tables that need to be made simultaneously by the hotline. The hotline sous chef then calls out that pick, might be like, okay, pick up 20 dishes. And the team gets moving.
20 dishes at once.
Yeah.
Okay. And the chicken itself. What's the prep like before it even hits the heat?
So these are half chickens. They get browned in this fermented habanero citrus brine first. Then they're dried really well, which is key for getting them ready for the grill.
Ah, the grill. I imagine that's pretty intense too.
Oh, yeah. It goes onto this massive grill that's ripping hot, like 1200 degrees Fahrenheit, that gives it texture and color really fast. And the size of that grill is crucial for handling the volume they do. After it gets that sear on the grill, it moves straight into an oven that's located right underneath the grill, helps it cook through evenly.
Clever setup. So timing is everything here. Who calls the shots on when that chicken is ready?
Timing is absolutely key. Francesca, she's the grill cook in the video. She dictates the timing. She calls out what they term the hole. So she might say something like, in 6 minutes, those chickens and whatever else is on her part of the pick will hit the pass. Everyone knows that 6 minute window is coming.
Okay. So while those chickens are cooking, counting down in the hole, what's going on back at the pass to get ready?
They're prepping for arrival. Specific plates for the chicken are pulled and grouped together. Sides, salads, garnishes are getting prepped beforehand. A lot of those ingredients are stored in these refrigerated drawers right under the pass work surface. It's all about efficiency, being ready the second that food hits.
And when the chicken comes out of the oven, straight to the plate.
Not quite yet. First, it gets sliced. Then it makes a crucial stop at the salamander.
Ah, the salamander again. That super hot broiler, right? What's the purpose here?
Exactly. 1200 degrees Fahrenheit. They brush the sliced chicken with brown butter, then slide it under the salamander to crisp up the skin and give it this extra shot of heat, as Chef Kent puts it.
That sounds like a bit of a secret weapon, that salamander. Why is it so important in this kind of fast-paced, high-volume setting?
You know, it really highlights this idea of the final touch, recognizing that the very last step before a dish goes out can make or break it, especially with temperature and texture. That salamander is described as a total workhorse. They use it for octopus, fish, even the short rib bones we'll talk about, because food cools fast. That final blast of intense heat ensures consistency, makes it feel like it just came off the fire. It's about having the right tool for that immediate, precise adjustment right before it leaves the kitchen.
That makes a lot of sense. And the plating itself. I heard they have a specific philosophy there, too.
They do. At Crown Shy, all the food is really intended to be shared, so the garnishes get spread evenly across the whole dish, not just piled in one spot. Most elements are actually pre-cut, too, so like every piece of fish or short rib gets the same amount of puree next to it, ensures consistency. And for the really precise work, they use tweezers. Chef Kent jokes and calls them two freezers. It's for intentional placement, dexterity, and also keeping grubby hands off the food, as he says, cleanliness and precision.
Keeps it looking sharp.
Yeah.
And flavor-wise, what's going on with the chicken?
Flavor is definitely king. The chicken gets coated with this bright citrus juice made from orange, grapefruit, lemon, lime, star leaves, and also some Crown Shy hot sauce. The description is spicy, bright, just delicious. And you get the sense Chef Kent really prioritizes how it tastes, maybe even over making it look overly fussy.
Sounds amazing. Okay, let's tackle one more staple. The short rib. This is apparently always on the menu. How do they nail such a rich, complex dish night after night for so many people?
Well, the short rib is a perfect example of what you might call proactive perfection. It all starts way before service at what they call the garage table, probably part of the guard manger area. It gets seasoned, seared really well, and then it spends 48 hours in a warm water bath. They use an immersion circulator, low temperature.
To feed for 2 days. Wow.
Exactly. And that low, slow cooking is what keeps that beautiful rose color, as Chef Kent calls it. Perfectly medium rare all the way through, incredibly tender.
So they're basically front loading all that precision cooking time, meaning during service, it's mostly about finishing it quickly.
You got it. After that 48-hour bath, it gets seared again, this time on the plancha. The plancha is this big flat-top grill surface, but it has different heat zones. So they can get a really nice even sear on things like octopus, squash, and yeah, the short ribs. It can handle up to 20 short ribs at once.
20 short ribs searing at the same time? That's volume.
That's volume! Mm. And then, after it's seared and sliced up for sharing, guess where it goes?
Back to salamander.
Back to the salamander. It's crucial for the short rib because it's been cooked sous vide at such a low temp for so long. That final blast of high heat is essential to make sure it's served properly hot.
Makes sense. And they do something with the bone too, right?
Yeah, it's a nice presentation touch. The short rib bone itself is cooked separately until it's beautifully white, and they serve it on this little wooden board alongside the meat. Chef Kent actually learned that technique from his grandfather. He jokes, though, don't eat the bone. Apparently, even his dog won't touch it because all the good stuff has been cooked out into the sauce.
Oh, okay. And what comes with the short rib?
Garnishes are fried potatoes, some fried sunchokes served with Taleggio cheese, and this really vibrant chimichurri, herby, spicy, citrusy. And here's another cool detail showing how they use everything. Any excess trim from the short rib gets used to make a horseradish potato puree. They dispense it from a whipped cream canister, like a savory whipped cream. They call it the potato spoon.
A potato spoon. That's clever.
Right.
Wow, it's so clear just listening to these examples that there's immense technique, tons of thought, real effort behind every single dish, simple or complex. But what's the, I guess, the foundational element? What makes this whole high wire act possible every night? What's the real secret sauce here?
Well, according to Chef Kent himself, it all comes down to one thing. Mise en place, that classic kitchen term, right?
Yeah.
Everything in its place. He says the entire operation is only possible because of the insane level of preparation that happens before service. He even brings up Anthony Bourdain saying prep is the most important part of this. That's when you get the work done. And that philosophy, that commitment to mise en place, you see it woven through their whole pre-service routine.
Right. Tell us about that. What does that pre-service schedule actually look like? When does the mise en place really kick into high gear?
It starts early. The first cooks are in around 9 a.m. They're already prepping vegetables, making sauces, mixing batters. The entire pastry team is in full swing, making breads, prepping dessert components. Then by 2 p.m., you've got cooks and the sous chefs out on the floor doing all the final setup and checks for the 5:30 p.m. opening. Fridges are getting loaded with all the prepped meats, the garnishes, pastas being hand-cut, inspected piece by piece. Just an incredible amount happens before a single guest walks in.
So the guiding philosophy isn't just about the cooking during service. It's this almost obsessive commitment to detail at every single stage beforehand.
Absolutely. It's crystal clear. Chef Kent says, attention to detail is the most important thing. We're in the business of splitting hairs. And that's where the Swiss timepiece analogy comes in again. He describes restaurants at this level just like that. Countless tiny cogs, all these people contributing to this incredibly intricate, precise operation. It has to flow continuously, interconnect perfectly.
And once service does start, it sounds completely relentless. The video describes it as never stops coming, like a tidal wave, wave after wave after wave. Which, yeah, makes perfect sense why that intense mise en place is just non-negotiable.
Exactly. So, you know, what we've really looked at today isn't just a kitchen. It's more like a symphony, right?
Yeah.
Meticulous planning, perfectly synchronized movements, and this just unwavering commitment to detail. Everything from the expediter's calls, making sure everyone's on the same page, to using tools like the salamander for that critical final touch. It's just, it's a massive testament to the coordination, the passion needed to deliver, like Chef Ken says, the best experience possible for every single guest.
Yeah. And thinking about that kitchen as a Swiss timepiece, you know, every single cog perfectly aligned, it really makes you think about the power of true mise en place, doesn't it? I mean, if a place like Crown Chai can turn the absolute chaos of a dinner rush into these culinary masterpieces through that kind of extreme preparation and coordination, Well, it makes you wonder, what could you achieve? What could you do if you applied that same level of intentionality, that detailed planning, to your own projects? Or even just your daily challenges? How could a bit of that proactive perfection, that focus on the crucial final touch, maybe even some clearer communication loops, how could that turn your own everyday mad rushes into moments that feel, well, almost effortless? Something to think about.